Hello, and welcome to another episode of Study of X, the bi-weekly X-Men podcast where we go through the Krakoa era of X-Men in not quite chronological order, but close enough. My name is Tim, and as always, I am joined by Sergio and Chris.
Hi, hello.
Hello, happy almost New Year, or it's New Year's. I can't remember when this comes out, but either way, happy holidays.
Happy holidays. Do you all think Santa Claus is a mutant?
No.
No.
No, no, okay. No. I think he's a magical being. I think he's like Doctor Strange here.
Okay. I can accept this. You know, he goes to the meeting of all of the Sorcerer Supremes every now and again.
He's not welcome in Krakoa. I would have to go read that issue of Iron Man and Doctor Doom again to see canonically what Santa Claus is considered in the Marvel Universe, but he has shown up in the Marvel Universe.
I have no doubt.
Yeah.
How does he deliver presents to Krakoa, though?
That is a solid question.
We don't even know if they celebrate Christmas, actually. They may just come up with their own holidays, I'm not too sure.
Do you think, like, it can snow on Krakoa, or, like, it's like an artificial deal?
I would say artificial, but in the way of, oh, just call up Storm and have her make it snow, you know?
Oh, you think they just do that instead of have, like, Forge invent something?
Yes. Well, maybe I could see Forge inventing something further down the line so they don't have to bother Storm all the time. But
yeah,
maybe for, like, the first few times, they would just call her up.
Like, imagine Storm's on a mission with the Marauders or something, and they're like, hey, come back, we gotta have you do the snow thing. It's Christmas time.
Mm-hmm. Look, I know you're saving all of these immigrant mutants from countries that don't want them to come here, but the snow is very important.
Yeah. But, so we got a couple issues this week. We got Hellions 3 and 4 to finish off that arc, and Marauders number 10.
I would say that they are as happy as a Christmas time, but not really. Everybody has a bad time, and it's good for us, bad for them.
Yep.
Yeah, so, checks out.
Yeah, things have gone not super great these issues, and I guess we should get into them.
Yeah, we can hop right into Hellions number 3, Nothing People. This was released back in August of 2020 and was written by Zeb Wells. And does anyone want to take a crack at our, you know, Star Wars The Clone Wars opening here with Nightcrawler?
Yeah. Sergio, you got this one.
Okay. I do wonder which binds us more. Xavier's ideals or the trauma of being a mutant. The dream or the pain.
Yeah, great stuff.
That was really good.
Yeah. Thank you.
What and, does bond them more?
I'm going to go with the latter because most people don't like Xavier. So, yes, there are some who will agree with his dream, but I would argue most are bonding over the pain.
Probably some bondage mutant.
Yes. Also,
I'm
going to
go with the third option. Yeah.
Yeah.
The third secret option that Nightcrawler didn't talk about.
Uh-huh.
So, back at the clone farm.
Yeah, back at the clone farm, speaking of trauma, we have Madeline Pryor tell Alex, or us, the audience, of the trauma she has been through over the years. How she was loved and then abandoned for the real girl that she was cloned after, and all of the other traumas associated with that.
She summons a piano?
Yeah, she says she's going to play
it. Already there.
I think she summons it, but yeah, she says she's going to play him a spell and then summons a piano, which is pretty neat.
Mm-hmm. Very dramatic, as she continues to be. But Alex decides to one-up her with the trauma and breaks some glass, cuts his mouth open, because if you remember from last issue, it was magicked shut, and instead tells her of his trauma about a boy who wanted the woman his brother had, who promised he'd give her everything his brother couldn't, and then later learned that the girl still loved his brother more.
To just back it up a little, I want to just kind of talk about, like, Madeline's speech while she's kind of doing the piano thing. She's going through, like, her different kind of stages when she was you know, going through this trauma. Like, we first got her as a pilot, which is what Scott found her doing originally. And then we, you know, have Madeline pregnant with their baby before just turning into, like, a faceless mannequin.
Mm-hmm.
When it was, like, revealed that, you know, she's just a clone of Jean and wasn't actually, you know, who she thought she was.
Yep. And a good line here, you know, and the girl became a nothing person in a nowhere place. Her whole world was ripped right from her that she thought was hers, but it really wasn't. So she was left with nothing.
Yeah. And, yeah, Alex's response to this just cutting open his mouth is pretty gnarly. Madeline does not seem to have expected this, but seems happy about it.
Yeah. More than happy. They kiss over their trauma bonding.
Yeah, with his, like, very gross... ripped off mouth. Yeah, this all seems very toxic, but
absolutely,
this is a little fraud.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
good for them though. Honestly.
Yeah. Like you know, happy for you.
To be fair, this is kind of like the average X-Men backstory. So, you know, go get
them. Yeah, like doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so they have a little makeout before we go into our you know, introduction page. And then we get back to Psylocke.
Yeah, who is bleeding profusely from being attacked by Wild Child. And she has him heal, and by doing that, she strikes him psychically through the head with a really cool dagger, and takes away most of his mind, leaving the lower functions, which does not do what she wanted it to do.
Yeah, she kind of has a uh-oh moment where she realizes lower functions just kind of makes him a actual Wild Child. I really like the page of this psychic dagger, though, because it's like coming out of his eyes.
Yeah, it's really cool. Really good lighting here. Just everything looks great.
Yeah. Just like Fallen Angels.
Yeah.
Yeah, just like Fallen Angels,
just
but better.
Just like Fallen Angels. But yeah. So,
and then we cut back to Havoc and Maddie talking about why, you know, she doesn't have her marauders eat Grey Crow. He's hanging upside down now. And she says, well, no, they have to work for their meal. And we cut to the vast majority of the zombie marauders trying to break open Nanny and Orphan Maker with a bunch of tools that look like they're not really doing the job.
Yeah, I believe specifically this is a Riptide Scrambler, Blockbuster, and Harpoon. Prism died last issue.
Yes. Yeah. And no tears were shed for him.
No. But yeah, they are just trying to crack these people open like eggs.
Huh, get it?
Yeah.
Because Nanny looks like an egg.
Yeah, you know.
Oh, I see it. Okay.
Yeah. And this one guy is saying scramble a bunch, like...
Uh-huh.
Scrambled egg. I think I made this joke last time. But yeah.
Yeah, it's okay. The comic is going to keep that joke going. It's not going to let it drop for now. And we have Maddie talking to Grey Crow a bit, how she says her least favorite thing is having people pretend she doesn't exist. And you can tell Grey Crow doesn't get it until she has Arclight come over and start to cut her wrist so she can eat it, when he says he finally remembers.
Yeah. Also, apparently Grey Crow is the person that shot her and took her child, which kind of, I think, kickstarted her just, you know.
Her spiral?
Yeah.
If you want to call it that. You know, I have not read that, but it makes sense. He was part of the Marauders, which was Sinister's group, and Sinister was the one that wanted her removed from everything.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, no, she doesn't take it well if people forget her, which does, again, tie into the whole nothing person in a nowhere place, seeing as pretty much everybody did forget her. And to say it's driven her a little mad feels like an understatement, especially with this next page, where... You know, she finds it all funny now that this is happening and that she is planning to kill a whole bunch of mutants so people finally remember her.
I like her face progression in these panels here.
Yeah, it goes from this, like, very sad, solemn, just, like, reminiscing to, like, you know, the reveal of, like, oh, she's gonna kill a bunch of people. And it's just, like, this unhinged look in her eyes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does a very good job of showing, you know, that she's not well.
Yeah. But yeah, Arclight's gonna eat Grey Crow, and we're back to Psylocke and Wildchild.
Mm-hmm. And these panels, you know, it's just a couple of panels with a few bits of dialogue of these two fighting. Wildchild, now that his mind is gone, looks absolutely feral. I love the way that he is drawn and colored here. He looks very scary. But still, Quanon is able to quickly grab him, break his arm, and then snap his neck.
Yeah, just leaves him on the ground. And then we get a data page, and I feel like at this point I am convinced that this is Beast.
It's gotta be. I get more of a Beast vibe from this than I did last time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially with the last lines about how, you know, he will accept many things unless Krakoa is burning behind his back, which definitely feels like Beast at the moment.
Yeah, and there's also like this like talk of like Scott, like it's very clear like coming from someone that has been on a team with him before, but pretty much where this data page is kind of just talking about Psylocke's place on the team and how she's kind of thought of as like the responsible one, the one's gonna watch out for everybody, but she is, you know, a hand assassin, and Sinister might think he has one up on her, but when the chips were down, the person they're following wasn't Xavier, it was Scott. So that's probably what is going to happen with Psylocke. But, it's a lot of throwing shade Psylocke's way. Just, this is an assassin. Should we really be trusting her? But also, I don't care because it will probably be a headache for Sinister.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely trying to sell her as an unknown quantity.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, while also mentioning that it does seem a little weird that she is not paying reverence to Sinister, but that she is following along with it, which has what we assume to be Beast, as guessing that Sinister has something over her, but he's not sure what it is.
Yeah. So, back in the present, Madeline is very upset about stuff still.
Yep, you've built a home for all mutants, all except me. And she is very hurt about that.
Fair.
What do we think about this? Is it justifiable?
For her, no. Because as she is going to spell out her big villain plan in her monologue, is she is going to release all of these zombie marauders onto Krakoa so she can leave her footprint in the blood and ashes of the island so no one will ever dare say that she is forgotten. Kind of an overreaction for her. that's a bit much, I have to say. There's something later on in the next issue that I think has a good point to it that I'll talk about when we get to it. But for her wanting to burn all that stuff down, nah, I'm sorry, but Mystique has a one-up on her for that one.
Yeah, I do think there probably is something to be said about Krakoa's treatment of clones. And it really does feel like she has kind of got, like, thrown aside and discarded here. So I get that this is probably, like, actual hurt.
Yes, and you can tell, you know, as we just went through and all of her trauma, but there's a way to do this without burning it all.
Yeah, but yeah, she's telling Havoc, yeah, like, I'm gonna cut your head off and give it to your brother.
Mm-hmm. And he seems all for it. He is broken and beaten at this point.
Yeah. Speaking of broken and beaten, things aren't going super well for Grey Crow and Orphan Maker and Nanny.
Nope, and it looks like the Legacy Marauders were able to make a crack in Orphan Maker's suit, and it opens up and shoots this highly acidic metallic liquid onto one of the Marauders and completely melts his face.
Yeah, Scrambler's just, done after this. I think this just killed him, but yeah, that's a skull.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty bad. And we get this beginning of a backstory from Nanny about what is going on with Peter and that, but she gets cut off pretty much immediately, so we will not know the answer to that.
Yeah.
For a second, I thought the acid that spit out was, like, the mutant itself. and not like a defense mechanism.
Yeah, yeah. I was kind of thinking that too. I was like, whoa, what's going on? But yeah, it's, I guess, just some kind of ability. Or
yeah, and it is, suit. It's not shown in this issue, but I mean, Orphan Maker is able to get up and keep going despite this. So yeah, whatever this was, doesn't seem to be vital for him, at least.
Yeah, and it also doesn't seem like they actually cracked the suit, because we do see him later and the suit looks fine. So yeah, I think this is just a defense mechanism, kind of what Sergio was saying.
Uh-huh. Still kind of weird, though. The hole looks much bigger than the one we see later. Maybe it has some regeneration abilities. The suit itself, I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah, it might. So, but we do see Arclight here begin to eat John Greycrow. And as Quanon is waiting for Wildchild to heal himself, which I actually forgot he could do until this moment, he wakes back up and he is now back to quote unquote normal and thanks her for settling the issue of hierarchy. And he says knowing who's in charge calms his mind. And now the two are able to go and theoretically save the group.
Yeah, it's a very different facial expression that we see on Wildchild here compared to a couple pages ago. Very subdued. Like this is someone who is he's a follower now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's not the same as the guy who attacked the cop at the beginning of the story.
Yeah. And yeah, that's the whole issue. I feel like it's very much like the middle issue in this arc.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this one and the one after it feels very kind of short. Like I could summarize them super quickly. They feel like they just tying up loose ends.
Yeah,
and you know, getting this to a close. I do think that I maybe would have liked this to be one single issue rather than two. But we can probably go into that after we discuss the next one.
Yeah. It is definitely a good issue, but it feels like a lot of what we got in last issue, aside from the Madeline's kind of, you know, character stuff, where it's just, yeah, things yeah, are continuing to go very bad.
It's fun enough. I do think it's a very fighty, like there's a lot of battle raging in it without much development, but
yeah,
I think the exposition for Madeline is probably the best.
Yes. Yeah, the Madeline stuff is definitely carrying the issue. I like the Psylocke Wildchild stuff as well, but there's not much to it. Psylocke, you know, gets him to submit and we're done with that.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I agree with all of that.
But yeah, issue four.
All right. Issue number four. Oh, go ahead. You're going to say something.
Yes. May I be heard in this? The challenges of the soul outweigh those of the body. Either we befriend the sorrows of the past, or they destroy us.
That's very good. That was a very good Nightcrawler.
That's very wise.
Yeah, very wise. And, you know, it comes into the title of this one, as it is Love Bleeds. It was released in September of 2020, still by Zeb Wells.
So we're four issues into this now. Do we think these Nightcrawler things are supposed to be ironic?
No, I think he says them very earnestly.
Oh, no, I think Nightcrawler's saying them very earnestly. I'm just, from like Zeb Wells' perspective, I guess, I'm trying to figure out what the intention of these are.
Oh, I read them as earnest as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was an interview I read with him right before this came out where he was talking about this. I want to say he was also earnest about it. As he was writing it, they just kind of came up to him. But I'm not going to say that with super confidence because I don't quite remember. So I will pull that up next time we read Hellions and triple check that.
All right. But yeah, we're back.
Yeah, we're back. Havoc still, man, he's not doing well because as Maddie explains that Sinister's machinations here have weakened the wall between Earth and Hell, she is using it to talk to her old demon friends. And they want to help out with this whole legacy marauder situation, but Havoc has to be sacrificed in the process.
Yeah, we get a bunch of little demon things coming, demon hands coming from the wall. Havoc's in a pentagram. Things are not looking up for him.
Nope, but he is, he's taking it with a smile on his face.
Yep.
And a lot of blood.
and a lot of blood.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Grey Crow's being eaten.
Yep. I mean, he'll heal, so he will be okay. But Nanny's not doing too well. So it looks like one of them does get her glove off, and they are about to start eating her when Wildchild and Psylocke come in to save the day.
Again, this is very Battle Rages type stuff. They make very quick work of these marauders, although Wildchild does kind of eat a harpoon through the stomach.
Mm-hmm. But I do like this little interaction right after where Quanon goes up to him, pulls the spear out, and just yells at him to get back in there.
Yeah, it throws it at Grey Crow to use to get out.
Yeah, problem solved.
Yeah, done.
Mm-hmm. I think this in particular gives us a pretty good glimpse that this team can work together theoretically. I mean, just Quanon and Wildchild here were able to take out pretty much almost all of the marauders here. It's just they're not a good team. As we saw earlier, they kind of really messed up when they first jumped in.
Yeah. I will also say I think Psylocke's kind of carrying right now.
Also true, yes. I think being a hand assassin really does help with your fighting skills.
Yeah. Everybody, before things can really pop off, a rumble is heard as Arclight mentions that the clones are all being released right now.
Mm-hmm. And in a moment that is a bit reminiscent of the fake out from last episode, Arclight does say that her hold is weakened on her and that she can more or less be herself now. Grey Crow tells the others how to get to the main control area and where to go, and sends them off because he has to handle the rest of his team.
Yeah. You know it's true this time because the text box goes back to normal.
Yes, yes. I still did have a moment of like, oh, maybe they're doing it again. But yeah, no, this one actually does seem to be legit. She does have her mind back. At least briefly, because as the Hellions here leave, Grey Crow takes part of his robotic arm that he has, pulls some pieces off of it, turns it into a gun, and just begins to eliminate his entire team.
Yeah, he's handling them.
Yeah, it's definitely handling them. It's like, yeah, Arclight is in the middle of just kind of trying to figure out what the heck is even going on with her and like what she looks like now. And yeah, everybody's dead.
Yeah, in a scenario where there is resurrection, you know, the Mercy Cube is probably the way to go here.
Yeah, yes. Like, these are mutants, they're going to be able to be in the resurrection protocols. Like, it's, they seem very, like, they are zombies that crave flesh. Like, this is probably, it probably is better to just get a hard reboot at this point.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
He is making a bit of a gamble in terms of getting them on the list and then having them, you know, there's a wait.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
for the resurrection to actually occur, but yeah.
This doesn't seem like the best life regardless, so I get the mercy kill probably is like the moral thing to do here.
Yeah. I do like the juxtaposition of this versus the data page that we had 2 issues ago, where it explains how he has been quietly talking to people about the Legacy Marauders and maybe bringing them back or not. You can tell, you know, he does have feelings under the surface of all of this stoicism and no emotion. And even in this last picture here of him, you know, shooting his teammates, he's kind of blank-faced about it. But, you know, what we know of what's going on behind the scenes, this is probably very hard for him to do.
Yeah, no, none of this seems like he's doing it with much joy. It's very matter of fact, like he knows this is the correct call here, but it's not done out of like anger or resentment. Like this is done because he feels like this is the correct path forward.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, again, I think it's a reasonable call to make in this situation.
Yeah, yeah, no, especially since, yeah, like you said, they are zombies who crave flesh.
Yeah.
Not the ones you want to bring to Krakoa.
Yeah. We got the rest of our team just going down in the cloning lab looking for stuff, and Nanny finds where Sinister disposed of mutants.
Yes, and just to point out, this is actually not down where they were supposed to go, as Grey Crow did tell them that they were going to go down. Instead, they went up into waste processing. So it seems he has sent them in the wrong direction. But before we get to that, yeah, Nanny does find out this is where all of the bad clones go. And she's not taking it well.
Yeah, seems not super happy with the fact that he's just throwing mutants away that he's done with. Just knowing what we kind of know about her character, this is very, I'm not shocked she's reacting this way.
No, same. She cares about mutant children, and I would assume that's how these clones start. Yeah. So, you know, you can connect the dots.
Madeline, talking to Havoc, just saying, like, oh yeah, I never lost my hold on you, and Havoc hits her with, like, nah, I've been through some shit.
Yeah, she actually has, like, a really nice moment of, like, comfort, almost. I don't want to say humanity to her. But she realizes that, yeah, his broken mind at this moment was not entirely her. Something else happened here. And she kind of feels for him for a moment. But that moment is very, very, very quickly dashed as Grey Crow shoots her in the heart.
Yeah. I agree. It's a moment that really does feel kind of like a moment of kindness here. And, just instantly cut short. Grey Crow has turned his arm into a rifle.
Really cool, by the way. But before we jump into that, I just want to double check. You said Havoc recently kind of went through, was it a villain phase? Was that what had happened recently to him?
Yeah, so in... I hate this event so much. But
I know you do, I'm sorry, but I just want some clarification on it.
So in the event Axis, what had happened was a bunch of Avengers and villains all had their personalities inverted. At the end of the event, they all got their personalities reverted back to how they were before, except for three characters, and those three were Tony Stark, Havoc, and Sabretooth. So Sabretooth remained as a good dude, Tony was acting like an ass, and so was Havoc. And Havoc stayed that way for a bit longer than the others.
Gotcha. Okay, do you remember how their personalities got inverted?
Something.
Okay.
I'm not gonna go too far into Axis. Like, the Hulk had a Hulk in Axis. It's a mess.
I mean, it does sound silly and like a mess that you can just take someone's morality and then flip it like it's a light switch.
Yeah.
It's very comic books. But I was just kind of curious, you know, if it was like a magic thing, if it was something to do with Universal Towers, you know, all of that fun stuff.
Yeah, I truly do not remember.
Okay. All right, but yeah, all we need to know is he got messed up, kind of went back to normal, but it seems like not entirely.
Yeah. So, after this, we kind of get Madeline's final moments here, where she kind of just mentions, hey, like, the thing that mattered to me was I was hurt and felt forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I wanted to feel real, and she uses her last moments to heal Havoc's mouth back to normal.
Yeah. Again, almost kind of building on the vulnerability that she just showed, you know? While going for murder in this situation was definitely overkill, again, I can't help but feeling bad for her, you know?
Yeah, like, this isn't just some, like, mustache twirling villain stuff here. Like, this is someone who was like genuinely hurt.
I feel like people have been forgiven for more, like, mutants so far.
Yeah, like, we got Apocalypse and Sinister here. Like,
there's some evil people roaming that island.
We are currently hanging out in Sinister's clone farm where he was like cloning babies and throwing them in the trash. Like, I think Madeline seems pretty tame in comparison.
Yes. You know, I know at one point she did lead a, you know, hell invasion on Earth, But yeah, like you just said, we have Sinister and his clone farm, Apocalypse, who has caused many, many global collapses and other millions of deaths. She's not the worst.
Magneto, I think, might have a bigger death toll than Madeline.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So it just seems to be, and as we are going to see later, it's the fact that she's a clone that is the problem.
Yeah. Havoc is not happy, does himself a little rage blast. Everybody runs.
I don't know if it's a little rage blast. It's a pretty big rage blast.
Oh, yeah, he brings this entire lab down on them.
Yeah, and it's a couple of pages of this, of everybody running and Alex just absolutely losing his mind and using every bit of power that he has.
Yeah, a lot of circles.
A lot of circles, a lot of blue, a lot of blurry lines to show you, yo, there's a lot of energy going on here.
Yeah. Yeah, but we all get out, and the house collapses.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, you see Alex kind of with his suit torn up as he stands there amid the rubble, and he doesn't seem to remember having just done that.
Yeah.
Probably not a good thing for his mental state, but good for them in the moment.
Yeah, and Wild Child, you know, just says, like, I guess they're right about us. We are just, you know, just crazy sons of bitches, and everybody shares a little laugh.
Mm-hmm. I have to say this is probably one of my favorite points of it, and it helps me kind of get a better idea of what this comic is going for, of like, yeah, no, this is a group of people who should probably not be together and are not functional, but hey, it's funny. And they all acknowledge that it's funny.
Yeah. I feel like this might be the first time Havoc has kind of come to terms that he is, you know, not in a great place right now as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, earlier on, before all of this happened, he was trying to convince Quanon that he did not have to be in this group. Maybe it was a mistake. And then immediately his mind fell apart. Yeah. So, you know.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But we got a mission briefing.
We do. And
debriefing?
Debriefing? Yeah. Probably also one of my favorite data pages in a while. You know, we've kind of been missing them with Marauders since we haven't really been reading that. But this is a good one. We have a breakdown of the operation for demolition of the Essex State Home. And it pretty much runs down through, I guess it worked? Yes, maybe everything was a mess, but hey, they destroyed it.
Yeah, I kind of like the little like wrap up here with all the members as well. Havoc has some issues. Emma did her best to fix up his mind, but she doesn't want to like go too deep into it right now. Grey Crow seems pretty happy with everything and apparently did successfully lobby for the resurrection of his teammates. Mm-hmm. Wants to go their separate ways though. Like he like just kind of like resurrect them and don't let me know anything else. Empath was dead and they're just like, yeah, that's it's fine.
I like the line, this was expected and within tolerance. Everybody knows he's an asshole, and it's totally fine that he died.
Yeah. Wild Child apparently is full team Psylocke now, and Nanny seems like she hasn't been in a great place since seeing what happened with Sinister's farm. So therapeutic value, I don't know. They conclude that this seems to have had good therapeutic value for them. I don't know if this is good therapeutic value for Nanny or Havoc.
I feel like they saw Grey Crow was happy and was like, all right, the whole team is happy. Good job, everybody.
Yeah. Like
yeah, I don't know about this data page. A bit too wordy for me. I think it's necessary because it's showing the outcome of the mission, and you probably can't convey that in only a few pages. But yeah, feels a bit too like wordy. Just gotta wrap things up.
Yeah, it is just kind of I wish it was quicker as well. But yeah, it is just kind of like a hey, here's what happened to all the characters.
I also like how self-congratulatory it is, yes. Kind of looking at the Quiet Council. It's like, yeah, you know, claps all around with
yeah, yeah. Again. A plus. Mm-hmm. Good job, everybody.
Yeah, I think that's why I like it so much and why I'm okay with it being as wordy as it is, is because, yeah, no, this is absolutely self-congratulatory, because nobody should be looking at this and being like, yeah, this was a great job. We did a good thing.
I wish it kind of doubled down on that instead of also having to spin that plate and the outcomes of the mission. But I do understand why it's like this.
I wish we got a little bit more into violent expression, because they are... Like, this one sentence feels very self-congratulatory, even though, like, the actual event does not seem like something that was therapeutic for them at all.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, I want to see the twisting of the story to make it seem like it was a success. I want to see more of that. There's some of this. I want more.
Yeah. Kind of our last little point here is them talking about Madeline, how we know she wasn't a human, but... You know, is she a mutant in her own right, or is she just a clone of Jean? I guess we'll figure it out. And we immediately...
In a couple of pages,
yeah. I was going to say immediately, but we get this Gray Crow thing first.
Yep.
Yeah, he is back on the beach where he is cleaning his guns again, and Quanon goes up to him and says that the Legacy Marauders have been approved for resurrection, but it's just going to take a little bit. And the two of them, plus Wildchild, who is here as a loyal dog... just kind of have a moment where, you know, the idea of the team is then reinforced. Krakoa doesn't ask you to deny your nature, and you have to rest peace where we can find it.
Yeah, and like, for everything about this team being probably very toxic, I do enjoy them just kind of watching the sunset together. It's a nice little panel.
Yeah, there is a lot that is very toxic about this team. I feel like maybe Gray Crow and Quanon are the most sane out of everybody.
Yeah.
You know, Gray Crow's whole thing is he is a absolute horrific murderer. And Quanon is there, you know, at the behest of Cyclops, and it seems like Sinister.
Well, Gray Crow, the inciting incident for Gray Crow to end up here was he was framed. So it does track for him to... Like he more or less does seem to have his mind about him.
Yeah, which is more than you can say for almost every other member of the team.
Yeah. But things are not all happy, as we see on Bar Sinister. Cyclops comes in and tells Alex the conclusion to the Krakoa's debate about Madeline. She's a clone of Jean. We're not bringing her back. And I like Havoc's little... kind of, you know, outcry here of, like, she's a real person. Like, why are we doing this? And, Scott just walks away.
Yeah, there's more to this with Sinister that we'll get into in a moment. But I really like this, especially as an end to this little arc or story that they're going for. Because it does bring up a good philosophical question when it comes to resurrection that I believe we've touched on a little bit. A lot of... mutants here, especially the main ones like Wolverine, they have clones of themselves running around here. You know, does that fall under, do they bring them back? Do they not? Apparently the answer is no, at least in Madeline's case. And I kind of agree with Havoc here. That doesn't sound right, because she is her own person. Yes, she started out as a clone, but she ended up becoming Madeline Pryor. You know, she is not Jean Grey again. She is her own person who made her own choices and has her own history and thoughts and all of that.
Yeah, she was a pilot. Yeah, I mean, Jean Grey was not a pilot. And that's just, like, part of it. Like, she's got her own history and, like, she's a separate person from Jean.
Yeah, I don't think this needs to be argued. I don't think there's any...
Yeah. Like,
deep philosophical question here. The answer is yes. There's multiple examples running around Krakoa right now. This is just an exception that they used because they wanted to, like, protect their ass.
Yeah. Madeline...
The fact that Havoc can justify bringing her back in, like, a couple of sentences, I think that's pretty transparently what the comic here is communicating.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything to be really argued other than... The Quiet Council being...
Madeline is trying to
cover their asses.
Yeah, Madeline is inconvenient for them. And yes. that's why she's not being brought back here.
Yeah.
Yeah, it feels very similar to the Sabretooth situation. There is a way to do it, but because it is inconvenient, they have decided not to.
Yeah. Yeah, meanwhile, Nanny shows up where Sinister, behind Sinister, and confronts him about the mutants.
Yes, and again, a reoccurring gag is going to be Nanny sneaking up on Sinister, and he just gets the shit scared out of him. It's great every time it happens, because it is going to keep happening. And it's funny every time to me.
Yeah, but yeah, she is not happy. Confronts him with this. Sinister's like, they're not going to touch me. I'm the one that is making this resurrection possible. Like, come on. And Nanny just like asked him how many mutants and says like, yeah, you know, want to know how many orphans gonna need to know how many gonna come punish you. And Sinister does not seem, seems pretty concerned about this.
Yeah, I really like this threat.
Yeah.
Because it is a very scary threat from somebody who's wearing an egg robot suit. But yeah, no, the fact that she is able to take his boast about being the father of all of the resurrection mutants here and twist that into being, well, at least I know how many orphans I'm going to make. Fantastic. Yeah. It's such a great threat.
Yeah, and next time is X of Swords. Well, you know. Not next time. Eventually.
Yeah, eventually for the aliens, it will be X of Swords, which is going to be our first major cross-issue event for the Krakoan era. Well, outside of... No, Empire is only the X-Men.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, so yes, I was correct.
Yeah, that's not really like a cross thing. But yeah, this will be our first major event, and I think this is our first mention of it so far. So yeah, we know that's coming. We'll figure out what that is later.
Yes, when we get to it, which is going to be a little bit of time for this podcast. But yeah. That is okay. It is a very fun event, and we will have a fun time building up to it.
Yeah, can't wait.
So how do we feel about Hellions?
Yeah, I already kind of gave my opinion. I think these two issues could have been one. It would have been a little bit tight. But there's a lot of like fighting and the battle raging and... things kind of running their course in a way that felt a little uninteresting to me. But it's fine. I'm having fun with it. The art is good. I do like the cast, I think, mostly. We'll have to figure out where this goes.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The third issue feels like the most bare bones. I'm very, very glad we are covering it with issue 4.
Yeah, I read through it very quickly.
Yeah. But yeah, I think the thread of just everything with Madeline comes through really strong here. I don't know if everything lands, but I think what does work works pretty well.
Yeah, I would agree. I really like this group of misfits. I especially like how the comic starts out by saying, hey, this group is not going to work out. And then we immediately see... Yes, this group does not work well together. They have problems, and they have a lot of stuff that they need to work on individually and as a group. And I kind of like how that did follow through pretty quickly and pretty spectacularly in many cases. I was a big fan of Madeline here. This was actually my first time seeing her back when I first read this, so I didn't know much about her. But I was able to get by the end of this little arc that... Yeah, you know, it is kind of messed up what they did to her and the fact that they are not going to bring her back. I remember back when first reading this, how it wasn't entirely discussed within my group of friends who were all reading it as well about clones not coming back. So when this came out, that discussion finally ignited of like, okay, what do we do with the clones? That is a good question. You know, and a lot of questioning of the Quiet Council here and the decision that they ultimately made that does not feel like the right decision.
Oh, yeah, no, I think the decision is very, very clearly wrong. I think the comic isn't really shy about it either. Like, this is not something that we should tolerate here. So, yeah, I'm interested in how they follow that up, because I think we have very plainly spelled out that this is a bad thing.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah. And I mean, we have talked about here, especially in questioning the Quiet Council and what they're doing. And X-Force kind of touches on it a little bit when they blatantly talk about it being the mutant CIA and how they're just kind of hand-waving what they're doing. But this is feels like it's the first instance of one of the comics being like, no, the Quiet Council was explicitly incorrect. You know, yeah. They have been shown as being a good force and a good thing for Krakoa. So having this be the first one of like, maybe think about it a little bit was nice.
Yeah.
God, I don't know if I agree with that. I feel like I get to see the Quiet Council fuck up constantly.
Yeah,
I agree in some ways, you know, and having reread this with both of you, I'm seeing it a lot more. But I think if you just read these without looking too much into them or too deeply into them, you can easily come away from this being like, well, the Quiet Council are obviously the good guys.
This doesn't strike me as particularly telling about the Quiet Council, like in ways that other instances of them being negligent hasn't.
Yeah.
Like, it's definitely a red flag, but it's a red flag that gets added to my red flag collection.
Yeah. It might be the most clearest cut example, but I think there definitely has been examples before.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's kind of what I mean. I mean by, like, the clearest cut one. Because with the others, somebody could play devil's advocate and argue here for or against them, even for the CIA one for X-Force.
I think that would be wrong, but yeah,
yes,
sure.
Yes, and I'm going to say yes, that would be wrong, but you could have people being like, well, no, that's correct. Whereas this one, pretty explicitly, the comic is saying, no, it's not.
Yeah, like, I would say I think what they're doing to Mystique is a pretty clear-cut example, even if she's on the Quiet Council. Everything with X-Force is pretty shady.
I would agree with Mystique, but I don't see that as a Quiet Council fault. I see that as a Magneto and Xavier fault.
Yeah, who are on the Quiet Council.
They are, but it's not like it's the entire council doing it. It's those two because they know about Moira, whereas everybody on the council does not know about her. So I kind of put the blame on them in my mind.
You're saying it's the rotten apples then?
Yeah. Yes.
rotten apples.
Oh, a couple rotten apples and, oh man, okay.
Yeah, just the bad apples.
Yeah, it's just the bad apples. You get rid of them and everything's good.
Yeah. We just got Apocalypse and Sinister and, yeah.
Those are the good apples.
Yeah.
Oh boy, no, you have a good point with that. You have a really good point with that.
But yeah. All right, we want to. Speaking of X-Force, we want to get into Marauders.
Yeah.
Yeah, I am excited to jump back into Marauders. Alrighty. So with Marauders number 10, Leave None to Tell the Tale. This was released in June of 2020, written by Gary Duggan. And we are opening up here on a new place. It is Port Genosha. It is the first distillery on Krakoa, where it looks like Forge and Tempo have been busy making whiskey.
Yeah, we get another example of a mutant circuit here. Apparently Forge is, I don't know what Forge brought to this actually, but Tempo is aging the whiskey very fast.
Yeah, I'm assuming he has everything else to do with like the barrels and the actual chemical process involved. Where Tempo's just going like, all right, and 20 years. There we go.
Yeah. But yeah, specifically, we've aged this 50 years, and Sebastian is getting real smug while drinking it and saying, this is the greatest miracle on Krakoa, even better than when you brought back my son.
Poor Shinobi.
Yeah.
So, but I do like here how even in the art you can tell that Forge and Tempo do not care about him. And the fact that he likes it. In fact, they really want him to go away.
Yeah, I love this line in our second page after Storm shows up where Sebastian's like talking about apricot and cinnamon on the palate and Tempo's just like, shut up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he really wants to nerd out really hard about this alcohol and just no one cares.
Yeah. But Storm comes in here and is like, hey, some Russians are using your power dampering tech. That's bad.
Mm-hmm. Forge is like, well, that's impossible. I deleted everything before I quit the U.S. government. And she's like, are you sure? And he pauses for a second and is like, well, there was this engineer that had a photographic memory.
Yeah. little bit of an oversight there, Forge.
Just a little bit. I understand that this guy is probably your friend. But photographic memory is bad.
It has been so long since we covered Marauders. I believe we might have talked about this last time. This tech was specifically used on Storm while they were kind of dating. Storm in the comics was missing her powers for a very, very long time due to this. So, like, this is kind of a permanent thing if you get your powers taken away.
Yes, and that's going to actually get brought up a bit later. We're going to learn that is intentional, that it is not as long now, because that would be pretty bad.
Yeah.
But she does have a reason to be very upset here that it is back. And we get that panel of them figuring out that there is this engineer that's still around. And then we're going to cut to the Quiet Council.
Big fan of Kurt, by the way, here. Just sitting on top of the chair.
Yes, also a big fan of that. I also still really like how it's Xavier, Magneto, and then Apocalypse sitting next to them because he is twice their size. It's a very fun and intimidating look.
Yeah.
But we are informed here that the White Queen is not going to be making today's session. It seems that they were able to find out that the Verendi government in Madripoor was talking with Russia and Brazil to make more of this mutant power dampening weaponry. And they found that they're making it on a ship. So the Marauders have decided to go and take care of it.
Yeah. Sebastian points out, like, this sounds like an X-Force thing. And honestly, seeing the mission, it kind of does. Marauders have gone to war. Stay out of their way.
Yeah, I really like that comeback from Emma's daughter here. And she's like, no, you have to read between the lines. They are going to handle it. You know, hint, hint, wink, wink. And before they can cut in and be like, well, maybe we should discuss this, etc., etc., Magneto makes the executive decision to say, tell the White Queen to leave none to tell the tale.
Gonna go murder some humans.
Yep. Did Emma overstep her boundaries? Yes. Is everybody way okay with it? Absolutely.
Well, I don't know about way okay. There's some objections going on, but
I mean, you have Nightcrawler, who, you know, is probably gonna get into the ethics of it.
Xavier looked like he was about to as well, but yeah.
I'd imagine the rest on the team are pretty cool with it though.
I don't think anyone's going to be bent out of shape about it. But
we've already seen the value of cathartic violence.
Yeah, just go ahead and do it.
True. Tie that back into Hellions. You know, maybe this will be a good therapeutic thing for Emma.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We go into our data page here, which is an email from Kate to Kurt.
Mm-hmm. It's, you know, kind of lengthy, but it's a really nice email from Kate to Nightcrawler. She's still struggling with the fact that Krakoa has not accepted her, and she feels like an outsider on this island. And she's hoping that next time she is in port, she and Nightcrawler can get together. Maybe she can cry it out a little bit and, you know, work through the emotions of this.
Yeah, it's pretty much like it's an email of Kate just kind of reaching out to Nightcrawler about, you know, going through some stuff. It's nice. I kind of like this insight into, like, how this makes, like, Kate, like what exactly Kate is feeling when about the Krakoa stuff, I guess.
Yes. It also feels intentional by Duggan to make sure that the knife twists just that much more when you are reminded that Kate is dead. Yeah. And they are having problems bringing her back. So, you know, just a little bit of the twist.
Yeah. Meanwhile, on the Russian ship, an iceberg has been spotted.
Yes, in the South Pacific, where normally icebergs are not.
Yeah.
Unfortunately for them, Storm and Iceman are on top of this iceberg, and they lift the entire ship out of the ocean because they're very mad.
Yeah.
Yeah. We get a pretty extended little spec ops scene here where everybody just, like, really cleans up. The Mercury is a UFO.
Yes, which I think is very odd, and it's going to be a running joke in this issue that nobody's going to explain why it's a UFO.
I had a hard time remembering what the Mercury was, but we have already seen it, at least inside.
Yeah. This is the piano boat.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. It seems to be able to change shape.
Yeah, because I think we might have seen this as like a submarine.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what it was.
Yeah, so there's something very special going on with this ship, but we're not going to be told what it is.
Yeah, they brought Forge along as well. Forge and Bishop come down here and neutralize a couple of the humans, and they find Forge's friend.
Mm-hmm. Who looks to have some sort of a collar around his neck. We could probably assume it is either a bomb or some other thing that would kill him if he didn't play along.
Yeah. We get Pyro and Emma walking down a hallway where Emma does some sex appeal stuff to make some humans shoot each other in the leg.
And honestly, so normally I'm not a big fan of these kind of things. You know, I have called out a couple of the covers for doing this kind of thing. We're just throwing out sex appeal for whatever. This one Emma does intentionally and I think works to really good effect and shows more of her as a person rather than just eye candy for the audience. Because she does. She unbuttons part of her shirt to show pretty much all of her stomach and her, you know, chest. And as all of the male guards look on and are pretty flustered by this, she is able to take control of all of their minds at once and have them shoot each other. Which she says was on purpose because it is easier to make monkeys do what you want if they all have the same thought.
I can take it or leave it. It's fine.
Yeah, if it was done a different way, I'm not going to complain too much, but it's sure.
Which I think is fair, you know. If this was done another way, I wouldn't have been like, oh, I wish they had done this or something, you know. Yeah. But having seen so many women and female characters treated in comics just for the sex appeal with nothing else attached to it, having it actually be a somewhat empowering moment for a character makes it much better for me. You know, it is something that is very rare and I don't see very often. So I was very happy to see it was done. I don't want to say tastefully, but so many other times have absolutely no tact to them that this one feels tasteful.
It's used as a tool instead of just like explicitly to like, you know, be sex appeal. Again, I'm not going to say it's the most empowering thing in the world here. I don't really think it is, but like it's, I'm not really upset about it either.
Mm-hmm. The bar is very low for comics, yeah. And they beat it, so I'm happy.
So one dude's about to blow up the ship, gets a knife shoved in his face by Callisto. We brought just the whole gang for this.
Oh yeah, everybody's here. So, but I mean, everybody is sort of coming together now that Kate is dead, so this makes sense.
Yeah. But yeah,
I do find it curious that we get at the very beginning of this whole Spec Ops scene, the power dampener suits on the boat, and then we get nothing of them throughout this whole scene.
We don't really see them, which I think is very weird. And weren't people wearing them at the beginning as well?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There were two of them, which. I have a feeling it might have just been a space thing because there's only, 28 pages for this comic? Less that if you take out all of the data pages in the credits. I'm sure Iceman and Storm probably dealt with them very easily. It would have been nice to see what happened to them, but I can see them just saving space and being like, just cut out that fight, you know.
That's kind of the point of the raid.
Yes.
And we get like a couple more things like that. Like this dude apparently has like a prototype pistol that I think was, you know, working like Forge's old pistol where a shot takes away their powers. But yeah, it's weird not to see this armor when that was kind of like the big point of it. It does.
That pistol's very funny. It feels like a low budget film where they, you know, they don't have
like an actual pistol
prop that looks different, so they use an actual pistol and say, oh, hey, this is the special pistol that we didn't get to use and we didn't see how it works. So, but this is a totally special one.
Yeah, magic pistol, yeah. But yeah, I do... It feels like the point of it is like just showing like how efficient the Marauders are. So I can kind of look past it, but it feels like an oversight, and I will say this whole thing does feel a little rushed. But yeah, got the gun, tells this man to go join the rest of the crew on deck, and everybody gets abducted with, like, a, you ever see the movie, oh god, what was the Jordan Peele movie? Nope.
Oh, yeah, it's Nope.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is a really fun sequence that I really like. It's Emma telling the captain exactly what they are going to do to them, and then we see it play out. But all of the men here are going to get abducted by the UFO. They are going to fall into a deep sleep while Emma and her daughters change their minds. So now, when they awake, you will have nothing but warm thoughts for mutants and any humans that dare to exist as an oppressed minority. Gay, disabled, trans, it doesn't matter. The thought of cruelty to those different than you will make you physically ill. And then they will go and drop these people off into the middle of the Red Square, and all they will remember is some little gray men probing and prodding them.
Yeah, so not quite the bloodbath Magneto led us to believe this would be.
No, and you can tell that this isn't exactly what Emma wanted either, because she ends it with, "This is more than you deserve." But it brings me back to earlier in a couple of issues that was a while ago for us, where Emma is talking about how Kate is more of a positive influence on her and makes her want to be her better self. So I would not be surprised if this decision to do all of this was almost a way of honoring Kate, because I fully believe that she would have rather killed all of these people.
Yeah. I can see that. It does kind of feel like, okay, let's go in and just, like, do this efficiently without, like, killing anybody. Yeah, at the end of this, we just wrap it up by blowing up the ship and sinking it, and the UFO flies away.
Mm-hmm. Again, I think, you know, this is tying into all of this issue for me. I really like Emma as a character. I really, really like how she takes charge in things. This moment also is really helping reinforce that for me. You know, the fact that she is just tearing apart these people and being like, yeah, no, this is what we're doing. You're not going to stop it. That's that, you know, tough shit. You're going to have to deal with it.
Yeah. So yeah, after that, we're back on board the Mercury. Bishop, asks about the ship. It's kind of given a non-answer.
Mm-hmm.
We're back on the island where Forge is having a talk with Daniels, who seems like a pretty all right dude.
Yeah, he seems pretty cool. You know, he mentioned that he left some hidden message in the chipset, hoping it would get to Forge so he could be found. And he also mentions that he did sabotage the project so the power dampening would not work as long, referencing back to what Tim said earlier. So it looks like, yeah, no, this guy has been on the mutant side the whole time. He just had a bomb strapped to his neck.
Yeah. And maybe not necessarily mutant side, but probably did not want to help these people out that kidnapped him and put a bomb on his neck. But either way, not hostile to mutants, so he's cool. But he can't go home.
Yeah. He unfortunately cannot because of his photographic memory. That is always going to be a problem. Thankfully, maybe not for Daniels, but for everybody else, Emma is there to erase a lot of his memory of things and take it away so he can no longer be a liability.
Yeah, and they send him to go play golf on the golf course with Mask.
Mm-hmm. So he's just going to retire in Arizona, which I'm sorry you had to retire in Arizona.
Yeah.
Kind of a very neat ending there.
Yeah, very, very... put a little bow on that.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, we get our last data page of an email that Kurt sent to Kate in reply to her first one, where it becomes very apparent that Kurt is writing this knowing that, like, this is after the fact. This is when she's dead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but no, there's a lot of sadness in this one.
Yeah. I like how it's a draft.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, he says...
I'm glad you pointed that out.
He's going to send this once she's, you know, back. But yeah, just sitting in drafts right now.
Oh, but yeah, no, this one combined with the earlier one, I'm a big fan of. It helps flesh out their relationship and that they're very, very close to one another. You know, we haven't really had the time or the space for that to be shown, so I'm glad we get some of it here.
Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And we get our last page here of, Kurt seems pretty optimistic in this email about them being able to bring her back to life. But we get our last page here back at the Arbor Magna, where the five are working on Kate again, and it's still not working. And Xavier's going to inform everybody of their decision because they don't think that there's anything they can do anymore. And we get next funeral for a mutant.
Yeah. So it does unfortunately look like Kate is probably not coming back from this.
Yeah. Wow, they killed a character forever.
Can't believe it.
Never before seen.
Yeah. Never before seen in comic books. A character finally dying for real this time.
Yep. Definitely never finding a workaround.
Yeah, absolutely nope. Not. But yeah, I guess she's dead forever, and that is the end of our issues here today.
Mm-hmm. I like this issue, you know, of Marauders. I mean, I've been saying it the whole time we've been talking about it, so I won't go on about it too much longer. I like it, you know, excited to read the next one again. I'm glad we got back into this because I really like this cast here. So, yeah, big thumbs up from me.
Yeah, I definitely feel like we had a lot of battles this in our issues for this episode.
Yes, there were a lot of, like, action scenes.
Yeah.
You know, it's fine.
A lot of the battle rages. So
mutants fight a lot, it turns out.
Yeah.
Yes. It's almost like they bond over the trauma instead of the dream.
Thanks, Nightcrawler.
But I mean, still shout outs to the artists for these issues as well for those. I mean, we have seen a couple of fight scenes already that are a little difficult to decipher what is exactly going on. So being able to read some of them that are just very easy to follow, it's just very nice, you know, and it's easy to gloss over that as we're reading all of these.
Yeah. So, yeah, next time and 2 weeks from now, we will be covering a new series. X-Factor number 1 begins. We will also be reading another giant size X-Men, Magneto this time, and we will be jumping back into Cable for the first time with Cable number 2.
Yeah, sounds fun. Lots of new things, mm-hmm. kind of shaking things up.
Yeah.
Yep. An old thing that we have not seen a follow-up to, so that'll be fun. But yeah, excited for X-Factor. I really liked that one. Giant-sized Magneto will be fun. And yeah, Cable. I'm going to have to review Cable number 1 because it's been a minute since we've all read it to see where we're going to go for number 2.
Hmm. Yeah. I remember there were some aliens looking for a sword.
Yeah.
Yes.
See what's up with that.
They were doing that. I wonder if that is a X of Swords.
Hmm. I sense combo potential there.
Remember old Cable fighting a crab?
Yeah, the crab.
I think one of Emma's daughters wanted to go on a date with Cable.
Yeah, that also happened. But yeah, okay. we got some stuff to look forward to.
It's coming back.
Anyway, you guys want to plug your stuff?
Yeah, let me do some plugs. Again, if you have made it this far, thank you so much for reading and listening along with us to all of these X-Men comic books. If you enjoyed this podcast, if you could leave a review on your favorite podcasting app of choice, that would really help us get out there so we can find more people to join us on this journey. And if you wanted to send us an email of questions, comments, maybe something we missed, or, you know, who your favorite Hellion member is, you can send it to us at studyofx@gmail.com. And if you would like to follow us on social media for the podcast, we are on Twitter, also known as X. We are on Tumblr and on Blue Sky as Study of X. We post when the episodes go up, some little bits here, the references that we use, and also the reading order that we're following along with. And if you are looking for me, if you want to follow me on social media, you can find me on Blue Sky under Sonics. That is SawneeKS. I don't post there too often, but I usually hang around. And Sergio, if they are looking for you, where can they find you?
Yeah, people can find me at Fireblend, FireBlend, on Blue Sky, mostly. That's about it, yeah.
Awesome. And Tim, if they are looking for you on a random ship in the middle of the South Pacific to warn you about the iceberg over there, where can they find you?
Oh, well, it wouldn't be there. I am currently waiting to be hatched in a cloning farm in Omaha, Nebraska.
Ah, okay. I might have some bad news for you, but we can tell you that off the podcast. That's okay.
Oh, what? Okay.
Yeah, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. But until next time, everybody, later, mutants.
Bye.
Bye.